Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back, everybody. We're going to spend the next hour looking at one of Baltimore's great institutions. This is the 15th anniversary of the Maryland Film Festival, and we've been covering this for the last 15 years on the Mark Steiner Show. We have a bevy of stuff from the past with Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, who, as we open this conversation today, we'll meet two filmmakers later in the hour. We are talking to him in the studio. Jed Dietz, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thanks. So great to be back.
15 years.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
So for a minute, take us back 15 years ago when you started this. What was in your brain then as opposed to what's really happening now?
Well, back then, of course, my classic nightmare was we'd put together this wonderful program and nobody was going to show up. And thanks to online sales, I know that's not true now. Which have been exploding. It's been fascinating to see this. So the big question, there were two, I guess, at the very beginning. One was that one. Is this community around Baltimore and Maryland going to respond to these unheard of films and, get excited about the discovery and the variety of this art form, et cetera, et cetera? And the second thing was, did the world need another film festival? could we do things that were a little different, that were really celebrated the art form, brought the film community together in a way with audiences, but also for itself? So I knew quite a bit about film festivals. I'd been attending Sundance for a long time before we started, and I knew a lot about Cannes, and I'd been in the film business, so you paid attention to those big market festivals, and they're great. But what they didn't offer was an atmosphere of relaxation and celebration for the filmmakers so that they could sort of go see each other's films and hang out together and learn from each other and talk about.
Because you created a world that was non-juried, non-competitive.
Exactly. Yeah. So non-juried, non-competitive, and no categories. Everything in
no
our program.
No categories.
Everything is just listed alphabetically. So we don't point out
right.
a foreign film or African-American film or an odder film, something more on the edge. We don't have a next program. We don't have the following generation or any of that stuff. It's all in there, but we just list them alphabetically.
And why'd you do that?
Well, just for that reason. I mean, it seems like the minute you categorize a film, you start to tell an audience something that you may or may not want to tell them about that film. And one of the great examples is, for years, the Toronto Film Festival, which is one of the greatest film festivals on the planet, way bigger than Sundance, interestingly, has all kinds of categories, one of which was the Canadian film program. Well, basically, that was a neon sign saying, these
boring, don't go.
Yeah, right. these films we sort of have to program because they're Canadian,
right.
But we didn't fit them in anywhere else in the program. And I've seen that happen at other festivals, and I just thought the only way to avoid it, we didn't want to program anything we didn't care deeply about, somebody cared deeply about on our staff. Somebody else could hate it. That's okay, as long as it has an advocate. And then say to the audience, describe it. We get 300 words in the program. Use those well, and then people can choose. So that's why we decided to do it. And I think it's worked. And I think both those things have worked. I mean, you give up for a film festival. You give up when you don't have a jury and you don't send out awards. You give up a little bit of PR value because your laurels don't, if you win the audience award at XYZ Film Festival, that will go on the DVD, that will, But for what we're trying to do, this is the right thing. I mean, the filmmakers really relax when they come here, and I don't mean they care less about their film.
Right.
But they're curious with each other.
So it can be more collegial. People can exchange ideas without feeling, if I talk to this person about what I'm thinking, they could use that to kind of win the prize that I want to win in this festival.
Exactly. And actually, we have started this filmmakers conference, which is an invitation-only thing just for the filmmakers and a few invited guests. That's a completely off-the-record gathering, and we provide food and Bloody Marys, and it's run by filmmakers. It's hosted each year by filmmakers, and it's an exchange of information.
During the festival itself?
During the festival. And that couldn't have happened, I think, with the competition going on. And there's nothing wrong with competitions, but we wanted to do something different and add something to the film community, since other festivals were doing those other things really well. I mean, the Cannes jury, is breathtaking. Spielberg's chairing it this year. I mean, it's a great thing. But they've done it. You know, why duplicate that? So we looked for things that we could do that were just added to the film community. And this guest host program that we created that you've been part of, you know, where we invite people who are not film people but have some profile in their own career to pick a film that's meant a lot to them and host a screening of it. You know, we've had, you know, Barbara Mikulski and Branford Marsalis and
Bob Ehrlich.
Yeah, and Bob Ehrlich and Martin O'Malley. Actually, Bob and Kendall together were, and they picked a great film, and we have the screenwriter was in town for that too. You know, so it's been many things this year. Frank Bruni from the New York Times is coming in, and he's chosen this really great Sidney Pollack film called Absence of Malice.
Oh, great movie.
Phenomenal Paul Newman movie. And Sally Field. And it's about false information getting out in through the mainstream press and the damage it does and how that really is irreversible once it gets out there. And it's a terrific movie. And Frank Bruni, I've never met him, but I've been a great fan of
his work. Yeah.
And the fact that he chose this as a journalist is fascinating to me. And we'll see that
when's that going to be?
And it is Saturday at 11, yeah.
It's interesting also that a lot of the films that you've chosen, you and others working with you have chosen,
yeah,
over the years that were unknown and the folks were unknown have gone on to become very known. That's a really bad way to put it. Have gone on to have their films be become national and international hits that become major screenwriters and filmmakers.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of examples. Alex Gibney had a little film called Enron, a documentary about Enron. And then he since has won Academy Awards for Taxi to the Dark Side, and which also played the festival, and he made a film about Hunter Thompson. I mean, he's one of the major documentary filmmakers in the country. When Catherine Bigelow and Mark Boal were here with The Hurt Locker, that film had been sort of abandoned by the time they came here, and I think they were really feeling like maybe it was over from a marketing standpoint. Proud of it, but thought it was over. And it got a lot of press out of here, and the distributor took it into the award season that fall, and of course it got nominated for all those Academy Awards, and both of them won Academy Awards, she being the first woman to direct a film and win for directing. Won Best Picture, and Mark Boal won for screenwriting. Lena Dunham was here with her mom with Tiny Furniture, this little film she'd made out of college, and that her mom is in, plays her mom in the movie. It's one of those low-budget kind of movies. And I remember her talking about this HBO thing she was thinking about and, you know, could she fit into that corporate structure and would Judd Apatow be a good partner? And, you know, now Girls is one of the big hits on cable television, and Lena's just got a huge advance for this new book she's doing, and maybe she's the new Nora Ephron. And, I mean, you know, you could see how talented she was. But that's happened over and over and over again. There's a great actress, Greta Gerwig, who's in this new movie it's about to open called Frances Ha. And she's been at the festival a number of years, came out of the small independent film. So that's part of what is the whole point of it, you know.
Part of it is you and the folks around you who have this eye for both the beauty of film, films that have a lot of substance, both docs and documentaries and dramatic presentations and comedies and shorts. And that's what's so, I think, been so impressive over the last 15 years is watching that grow and watching this ability to pull in unknowns who have some real substance, many of whom then will explode. Partially because of the film festival, partially because they're good, and you've noticed what others have said, no, because we're in this, as you said to me the other day at lunch, we're in this world, this corporate world of movie making that has kind of pushed those things aside.
Yeah. And wants Iron Man 3, you know, is looking for the next one of those. And the studios, and I love those movies. You know, this isn't anything about the artistic quality. I haven't seen Iron Man 3 yet, but
I intend to.
Yeah, me too. And I love the first one. So I'm,
I
saw Gatsby the other night, and, you know, I think the studios do great, great work and have all the tools available, you know, for making movies. You know, Lawrence of Arabia couldn't have come out of anything but a studio structure, you know. But right now, there are also big corporate machines that need great big movies that will open big and, you know, what did Iron Man 3 do, $175 million in a weekend? You know, all the films we show this weekend, I can guarantee you combined won't do $175 million. But I think the festival world, our job is to do just what you said, you know, is to find these great artists and ones that are compelled by telling stories and give them, you know, do our part to get them to audiences and let audiences experience what's out there.
So one of the important aspects of this too is that you give an opportunity for all of Baltimore, all of Maryland, people in the environs in D.C. to come participate in this, be close up close with the filmmakers, have dialogue after the films. It's a very intimate structure you've created over these last 15 years.
Yeah, that's really important. And the interaction with the film community that people get to have, certainly during, you know, right after the screening in the Q&A, but also during the weekend. I mean, you're going to sit next to a filmmaker probably at a film. You're going to, you know, share a Sophie's Crepe or a drink at Tapas with filmmakers. I mean, people are flowing in and out. And again, when the filmmaker's more relaxed here than they are at Sundance, where at Sundance, you know, they're literally in the hands of a publicist and they every minute of every day is programmed. Here, they're really eager to see this other guy's film that they hadn't had a chance to see and interact with the audience. And so it's a very special atmosphere.
Let's talk about some of the stuff that's coming up.
Sure.
And by the way, we should right now say this all during the course of this hour and how to get your tickets, but it's very simple.
And so you can buy tickets online through tomorrow, Thursday, and then you can call us after the online sales go down. You can call us, and those calls at 410-752-8083 will go right to our box office, our temporary box office in the Tent Village across the street from the Charles. And you can now, we just started this last year, you can buy tickets over the phone. So
can you come in and buy tickets?
And you can also come in, of course. Yeah, you just come in and buy tickets. And that's, you know, as you see things that go into the standby line mode or waitlist line mode, and you don't want to wait, look for something else, because I guarantee you, you're going to see something that will intrigue you.
Now, tonight is the opening night.
Yes.
As you're listening to us, we're actually dashing over to get there to opening night for the shorts.
Hope you make it.
Starts at 7:30.
Yep.
At Micah at the
Brown Center.
Brown Center.
Yep.
And the shorts, one of the things, a lot of them grabbed my attention, just real quickly while we're talking about it. One was Bone Shaker.
It's an incredible film. It's the first film, I think, this young girl, Quinjvangene Wallace, who was in the star of Beasts of the Southern Wild,
yeah,
and nominated, the youngest person ever to be nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Actress category. She's the star of the short, and all that charisma that was, it's a very different kind of movie, but all that charisma we saw in Beasts of the Southern Wild, you see very much in this movie.
I can't wait to see that. Yep. And this Flutter looks phenomenal.
Yep.
The
documentary about a guy who is sort of an avocation, but he's really great at it, collects bugs.
And you have a French film about France, Social Butterfly, which really looks interesting, about teenagers and...
Oh, it's beautifully done. I mean, it's a mysterious, sexy little film. I mean, it's what's in that film in a few minutes is extraordinary. And she's a terrific filmmaker, Lauren.
Is this filmmaker somebody who's only done the short or has done longer films?
She hasn't done a feature.
Not yet.
Not yet. She did have a short that we had in the festival a couple years ago, too.
Do you think shorts are going to end up, before we go into a couple others, before we have to go, do you think shorts are going to become part of a wave of filming in the future? I was reading how Robert Redford is saying that he just wants to make films that can fit on people's iPods and small screens that are kind of short and more intense. You think in some ways that's going to catch on as a way for people actually to produce?
Well, you know, in a way, of course, it already has caught on. It's called YouTube.
And that's true.
But the problem with it is finding these little gems, because obviously a lot of the stuff on YouTube, although it can be a whole lot of fun, you know, the cat films and stuff like that, they aren't these kind of films. They aren't made necessarily by artists who are trying to tell a story, and they come out of that tradition of filmmaking, which is very much the same tradition as feature film. You know, film festivals right now are the only way to sort of find these little jewels that are out there.
I was just wondering if there's going to be I kind of feeling that it could be a time coming where novellas and short stories are to novels, that these short films are to full-length features in terms of people grabbing a hold of them, whether it's just a download on an iPod that you pay for by paying 99 cents or $2 or $10 for, and it's yours, and you can watch it or rent it via Netflix. These short pieces catching on because that's what people seem to do. They watch short things, and then they go.
I think you're right, and I think we're close to a moment where there's really a market, where a filmmaker will be able to make a living posting, getting paid to make short films
right.
through mechanisms like iTunes. We're not there yet quite. But
I think we're getting there.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the technology and the marriage of people's lives being so speeded up and young people wanting shorter pieces, I think that...
Well, and audiences, I mean, we've seen it for years. You know, we devote our opening night to short films, and which has been, again, one of these contributions we could make to the film community because nobody else does it.
So let me just very quickly talk about some of the things that are coming in the middle. You can pick a few films you want to share. But Closing Night, Mother of George.
So this is a film from a guy born in Nigeria who's now splitting his time between Brooklyn and Lagos. We saw this script come out of the Sundance Labs in 2005. We gave it the Maryland Filmmakers Fellowship Award. It's a script. From that, you have no idea whether the film's ever going to get made. He has made one of the most beautiful films that we've seen. It's shot by a great cinematographer, teaches at Howard, a guy named Bradford Young. Both of them will be at the screening.
Wow.
It has, you know, great actors in it. It's set in the Nigerian community in Brooklyn, and it opens with this wedding, gorgeous to look at, fascinating, full of ritual that most of us don't know anything about, a Yoruba community wedding. And during this whole celebration, the groom's mother anoints the new bride by the name of her yet-to-be-conceived son. So she becomes Mother of George. And the problem is, of course, that sometimes getting pregnant is easy, sometimes not so much. And Ma George has a very difficult time, and the film is really about her trying to figure out how to deal with not providing this male son.
We have very little time, so we can get to some more filmmakers coming up in the next rest of this hour. But I know you have the Alloy Orchestra is coming back, which is this live orchestra playing.
Yeah, they compose special scores for these silent films. This one is called The Lost World, made in 1925.
Yes, about dinosaurs and all that stuff. It's gonna be,
and if you've never seen them, you got to see them.
And we're going to meet the 12 O'Clock Boys, another local film coming up. And during the course of the show, there's so many incredible films. Leviathan, which I can't wait to see.
Yeah. I would mention one called Downloaded, too, which is a documentary made by an actor named Alex Winters, who was Bill in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Keanu Reeves. Right.
And this is about Napster. So this is about the explosion of this little invention that these kids made. Sean Parker was one of them. And you know, it just blew up because it was sharing music files, and then the music industry came in and crushed it. And the film is incredible.
Well, Jed, let me just say this. First of all, I think I want to thank you for what you've given to this community.
No, thank you.
You have brought filmmakers from every culture, white and black and Asian and American and Baltimore and from Africa and Europe and from all over. This has been amazing what you built, and I just want to thank you.
Thank you.
For 15 years, you've given us the Maryland Film Festival. 15 more.
Yeah, thanks. At least 15.
At least 15. Whoever takes over after us, right?
Right, exactly.
We'll keep it going. So Maryland Film Festival opens tonight with the shorts, May 8th through 12th, Sunday the closing night. And you can get tickets at mdfilmfest.com or call
410-752-8083.
Check online what the films are and just show up and try to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we're going to talk to Lofty Nathan about his new film, The 12 O'Clock Boys, and we'll meet Pug and Coco, two of the stars of the film. Stay with us.